Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disadvantages and disabilities who have had taken from them or have been denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those about them.
Disrespect welcomes Sam Sansalone, the third installment of Saving Baby Joseph. We've dealt up to date with the hospital and the parents coming to different points of view about baby Joseph being in a persistent vegetative state or not, and we've given you Murder 101, how you dispose of a disabled baby when you want to use means that aren't readily apparent in a hospital. We did discuss some of the difficulty that you had in placing baby Joseph at other hospitals. And you, before this recording, you started explaining the reach of the Ontario medical referral system, that some hospitals were actually instructed not to talk to the London hospital.
Well, it was more like if there was an attempt to speak to the London hospital, one of two things happened. Either there is an avoidance of allowing the hospital to make a proper, normal connection that mm-hmm. would normally take place in a patient transfer query or situation, or the information that was ultimately transmitted from the London hospital to the receiving or potential receiving hospital was inaccurate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and you mentioned how baby Joseph and his parents seem to be caricatured in these conversations so that they would appear unappealing to the hospital, willing to take him on.
Beyond unappealing, like threatening. At least okay. in a legal manner or in a reputational risk manner. Reputational risk is a term we've heard the hospital use in Ontario.
Okay. So where did you go from there? How did you get around this?
Well, we learned with each quote-unquote failure to have the connection made for the transfer to another hospital how these failures were occurring, and we were quite stunned with what we were learning about what was going on behind the scenes. In a nutshell, what they would do is they would present the family, as you said, in the light of being a very difficult family, combative, and painted a picture that any hospital who took this family into their patient lineup can expect basically a lot of litigious type activity, and they should be afraid of a lawsuit is what was inferred if they dared to accept this baby as a patient. And then on the other side of the conversation was a discussion about the patient himself, and that was very misleading. They made it sound like it was so unbelievably, absolutely dismal mm-hmm. prospects. Mm-hmm. But it was not only a waste of time, but inappropriate to even bother transferring
right.
baby.
Right.
And as we know from the outcome, that wasn't true, because the baby ended up getting off the ventilator completely and has actually not regressed further at this point and is in his loving home where his parents wanted to be and where he had every right to be.
All right.
And the parents had the right to have him there.
All right.
And this was basically taking the form of rescuing him, because what had been planned before was amounted to what one observer called a medically orchestrated death.
Right.
And when you put a diagnosis together in a way that is not accurate or not pointing in the correct direction for what the possibilities are for this for a patient, and then you proceed with a plan of care, of removing care, that will be done in a manner that we described, you know, in the previous show, where it's bound to create the death itself, mm-hmm. because of the sequelae of the medical failures, mm-hmm. Around the prolonged intubation and prolonged ventilation beyond what was needed, mm-hmm. then what you can see is what you and I've talked about, where in a medically orchestrated death, it's like there are different levels.
Oh, okay.
And I remember you mentioning, like, you could almost picture the orchestrator or the conductor, mm-hmm. so that it's contrived. Mm-hmm. It's not just happening in a loosely defined or in a loosely executed manner. There's a clear plan. There are people who are directing, and it's moving in a certain direction. And this is what's more likely to happen when you have a reputational risk that's as great as what this hospital was facing publicly.
All right.
And when you think about what they were facing publicly, they kept getting themselves deeper and deeper into it. Every time they opened their mouth, instead of backpedaling early to say, we erred, you know, he doesn't really necessarily need a ventilator. He is actually taking most breaths on his own.
Gotcha.
They didn't do that. They tried to further the fraud by sticking to what they were saying, even though there is evidence to the contrary. I mean, we had evidence to the contrary, even though we had to get limited information by externally driven means. So imagine how much internal information they had at their disposal as doctors, beyond what we could have, you know, achieved in, with our various means that we used to collect information about Joseph's clinical status and other data that would help us understand his prognosis.
Okay.
So they were, there was no excuse. They didn't have an excuse to further it. But once you start on a bad lie, if you're that kind of a person, in order to keep it going, as other parts of truth start to surface, which was the key element in my strategy, just keep getting the truth in there. You keep discovering the truth and getting it out.
All right.
And to the knowledge of the people who could make a difference, which in this case included the public.
All right.
So that was done repeatedly and over an extended period until we had made it clear enough to make it suspicious enough such that the doctors weren't about to be so easily misled in the U.S.
All right.
When we approached the hospitals. And also another thing was done. The lawyer, the latest lawyer we had hired, had arranged that he would actually be on the phone with the doctors this time.
All right.
When the initial exchange of information, the verbal exchange of information occurred. So normally it should be a very simple matter when a patient is transferred to the hospital or when the patient's going to get a second opinion.
Right.
The hospital that has the patient simply contacts the hospital that's going to be the potential receiving hospital, and they give a description of the case, and then the receiving hospital makes their decision and the transfer is done.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, because the information that was being given was inaccurate intentionally, and there was misleading happening in different ways. I can't get into all of it at this point because some of the intel that was gathered by myself and people in my group is
too revealing.
It was done by private means that I can't disclose.
Okay.
But the misleading happened beyond even that usual channel of communication of hospital to hospital.
Okay.
It was really quite disgusting and extensive.
Okay.
I never heard of anything quite like it. But then again, there hasn't been a situation quite like this.
Okay. For the first break in a very tense show, the Hardline Blues Band, an instrumental called T-Line. So did you get any sense when you were talking to American doctors that they didn't find the portrayal of the Canadian medical system as involved in something like this surprising? Or were they, what was their response? The fact that, you know, we need your help because Canadian medical system's going to murder our baby. What?
The incredulity was probably the largest reaction. It was just beyond what they could fathom as really being that serious a situation. I mean, they're familiar with cases there where children who are cognitively disabled do get a kind of treatment that does, that could incline them towards an earlier death. That happens everywhere. It's not like it's a problem exclusively in Canada. But in Canada, what we have that makes it easier, perhaps in some ways, for this to be carried through and therefore makes it more likely to happen here, is that we don't have clear accountability channels. And I think we might have discussed this in a previous show, so remind me if I've already covered this.
No, I don't think we need to discuss that again. We did cover it. Yeah.
It's easier to perpetrate here with these blurred accountability channels. In a socialized medicine context where literally everything is funded and therefore controlled by the same dollar billing entity, you know, whether it's medical or justice or
so in fact, the outrageousness of what you were trying to convey may have helped your credibility. It's like too ugly for someone to make up.
Well, it did in some cases, but didn't in others. Like I can think of, I have some fairly detailed, well, very detailed information in some cases of the process that some of the hospitals had gone through internally. I'm thinking of one in particular, and that was a key problem for Joseph being accepted at that hospital at that time. It just didn't seem believable enough.
Really?
Yeah. It just seemed like it was too extreme because they felt that something like this would never happen to this degree anyway.
Okay.
In an American hospital.
Well, that's so true. That's their frame of reference, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And even though they're familiar, like I said, with removing life support or with removing interventions even that would normally be given a child but are denied one who is severely cognitively disabled, they're familiar with that, but they just couldn't see that something so criminal basically was happening.
Right.
That was certainly a feature and a factor of some of the hospitals, but I think a lot of it was simpler than that. They just believed what they were being told behind our backs verbally by the London Hospital, which was exaggerated and inaccurate and very misleading information about the case.
Right.
And a hospital wouldn't want to be, and the U.S. wouldn't have wanted to be responsible for bringing a patient across the border in a wasteful manner that was only perhaps even more harmful to the patient. And then on top of that, exposing them to this
reputational risk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was a media storm going on in London, and that storm, that eye of the storm, would just shift in their direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of what could have ensued from there in the way of a media mess being on their own hospital's heads, that would be very intimidating, I think, to a lot of hospitals.
So simply put, what would be intimidating to them?
That there would be a media storm now centered on their hospital. If Joseph came over and if...
Oh, I see. Because there was a media storm where he was, the media storm would move with the baby.
Exactly. And especially given the information that, the false information that they were buying, you know, from the London hospital, that the case was hopeless anyway, and the parents are going to just fight you and make it miserable for you. And they kept doing this over and over again. And there were other means they were using in networking in order to achieve this false impression, both about the baby's clinical status and about the parents.
Okay. Can you talk about anything that happened specifically that you got around? I mean, baby Joseph eventually ended up on the recommendation of an American doctor's wife in Cardinal Glennon.
Yeah, that's right. So
how many hospitals did you go through to get there?
Well, I probably probably shouldn't get into specifics about that, but okay. They were quite a significant number on the list. There was quite a number of those that were contacted, and there by at least us, and then there were definitely a substantial number that were in contact with the London Hospital.
Okay.
And ultimately, what worked, I had a list of hospitals, and there were some other people who were trying to help out as well, and they had some lists. There are literally thousands of hospitals in the U.S., so there's just too much work of trying to reach everyone on a personal level. So there were quite a number of people trying to find a hospital that was willing. And I had at one point decided to set up teams, and there were basically three teams.
Oh, okay.
We weren't all directly related.
All right.
And I had a personal list and a personal team that was very tiny because we had had some breaches in security in my network.
Okay.
That one of the ways I dealt with in that emergency situation was to literally shut down communications with some of the operations I was personally involved in. And one of those operations was a kind of list of golden opportunity hospitals.
Okay.
That I had decided, and Cardinal Glennon Hospital had moved to the top of my list.
Why?
Before.
Quality
for
of the referral?
One was that it was a certain level of hospital that had all the necessary specialties that were capable of doing a really full workup
okay.
of Joseph.
All right.
Including neurology, and the quality of the hospital and the staff was well respected.
And this was important because you hadn't yet got any kind of definition of what Joseph's real disability might be.
Right. We weren't wanting just to rescue him. We wanted to know, you know, what is causing this? Could we find out what's causing this? And is there any hope of addressing that? Because we couldn't take anything that the London Hospital was saying at face value because we knew that it wasn't reliable. Their word was not reliable.
Okay.
So we needed not only a fresh team, but a team that had extensive enough knowledge and expertise about this area of medicine. And some hospitals simply do not have that internally. So this met the criteria. But more importantly, there was an ethical side to this that we felt was more likely to be respected in a compelling way at that hospital. It is a Catholic hospital, and Catholics, at least on some official level, they have a very, what's called pro-life stand on these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Although there is quite a diverse range, actually, even within the practicing of the Catholic religion, I think. So I had to determine that in this case, the hospital was very much more reliable in that sense. And it is not a perfectly reliable hospital in that sense from the information I got, but it was...
So a lot of differing agendas sort of thing in the background.
Well, yeah, it's true that it is one of... It might actually be the last pediatric healthcare facility in the U.S. that is actually fully a Catholic hospital, because a lot of them...
You mean fully funded by the church?
Right, or something to that effect. I don't know exactly how it works. It is a pretty much independent Catholic hospital. I think I'd mentioned on a previous interview that was another reason why I thought they were a good choice, because there was some insulation there from the usual mainstream network of how these hospitals were structured.
Okay.
And we're trying to, remember, what we're trying to do is we're trying to get doctors who are going to give an independent, objective view, and the more insulated they are from the mainstream communications and the mainstream business of medicine, all the better, because it just creates one more door that someone would have to go through in order to try to influence inappropriately the doctors. In a nutshell, they had the medical technical ability, they had the range of expertise to go beyond just rescuing him from this or saving him from this situation, but to also try to delve into the causes, hopefully, and see if something can be done about that. And they had, at least publicly, a very strong mission of excellence towards the ethical side of things.
Okay.
And so that was a key reason why it moved to the top. Those were key reasons why I moved to the top of my list, and then I kept that secret.
All right.
And that was, I think I was given the name by the wife. Well, it's actually through the physician. I didn't speak to the wife. She told her husband.
Okay.
And then he told me
okay.
the name of this hospital and some others. But the Cardinal Glennon one had, as I said, moved to the top of my list.
Mm-hmm.
And then, interestingly, just days later, the exact same hospital, actually two of the hospitals that were given to me by that particular physician and his wife as ones to really consider,
mm-hmm.
that same hospital, Cardinal Glennon Hospital, was mentioned by Dr. Paul Byrne, who is a man that is in our network of supporters in situations like this. He's a physician that works out of Toledo, Ohio. As it turned out, not only could he recommend it as an appropriate facility for Joseph, but he has a kind of heritage there, in that he was their very first resident.
Oh, okay.
Their doctor, yeah.
When that hospital was new.
Yeah, like almost around half a century ago.
Okay.
And then after that, he was the person who first opened up their NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit.
Okay.
So it was fascinating to me that here's someone in our network who recommended the same hospital as another physician family as being appropriate for various reasons, and yet this time he was actually personally connected with its history in a very rich manner.
Okay.
And that kind of made it obvious to me that, wow, this is quite an opportunity that's been handed on a silver platter to us. So I switched at that point to have Dr. Byrne lead the negotiations at the Cardinal Glennon Hospital. Up to that point, I hadn't actually put anybody onto that assignment because I was waiting and planning. And the physician who I had chosen was a completely different physician to lead that negotiation discussion. But I switched in that moment when I learned about Dr. Byrne's history with the hospital,
mm-hmm.
because he would be visiting there. He would be communicating with them as a figure of, as a legendary figure.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself could carry some needed or useful influence.
Okay.
And it worked really well. It took a while. It wasn't instant, actually, but it did work well. They did a very thorough internal job of reviewing everything before. And then even after Joseph got there, it could be argued that they were excessive in there and how thorough they were reviewing the supposed ethical questions.
Okay.
But I think they wanted to make sure all the T's were crossed and I's dotted so that they would be intelligently ready for any media storm that might move in their direction.
Okay. Take a break with me pretty much halfway through the interview. Duke Robillard, look but don't touch.
You can look but don't touch, 'cause I'm already spoken for. Well, you can look but don't touch, 'cause I'm already spoken for. Honey, if that don't suit
You've been listening to patient advocate Sam Sansalone talk about his strategy, his efforts, and his success in bringing baby Joseph home from hospital to a loving family and a self-sufficient life.
You had trouble getting him in there, didn't you?
Certainly back in Canada, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because they were counting on us not finding a hospital that they hadn't influenced or that they at least wouldn't be able to influence in a wrong manner. That's what's pretty clear to me from my perspective. Okay. And all of a sudden, here was a hospital that they hadn't been able to get to yet.
Wow.
For whatever reason. And it was a hospital that they wouldn't necessarily be able to influence the same way.
Right.
Because of the religious or social stand that that hospital was reputed to have, okay. I suppose. So I think I suspect they got quite scared about that development. But we were ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
We were ready for what they might have done next. We had learned from the previous cases that one of the things that they would do, for instance, is once that communication starts happening between physicians and the ICU departments of each hospital, all the misleading information that was being given, we weren't going to let it happen this time. And the lawyer for the Marashley family was going to be present on the phone in a conference call so that he could note everything that was being said or not said.
All right.
And at first they resisted even the time, so the time was set up, and they did not cooperate with that time.
Okay.
Eventually it did occur, and they tried yet more tactics, and they went through this most ridiculous due diligence. It wasn't due diligence, it was absurdity, about making sure the air ambulance had all these licenses, making sure the people who were on board had their licenses. Like, this doesn't happen. When you're in a situation where a patient's being transferred, you don't go to the ambulance and you say, let me see everyone's ID, let me see your credentials, let's go back to the licensing bodies that license your aircraft, let's see what they say about you, or let's see the documentation you have on that. It was absurd.
Witch hunt, Witch hunt.
Except that it was fake, I'm sure. I mean, they probably were stunned because I didn't let anyone know about this, remember? Not even in my network. The only people that knew what was going on was Dr. Byrne and myself. And at the very last minute, I let Joseph's dad know because we needed some information from him.
Okay.
That was very last minute. And the other party I let know at the last minute after the decisions were made was Priests for Life, who is an organization that had publicly offered to pay initially for the flight, the medical transport, and then eventually offered to pay for the hospital stay.
Very good.
In the U.S. Yeah, so that was an apparently generous thing they did. As we found out later, they had other purposes in mind beyond just being generous, and it was quite stunning. That's a story unto itself, but we won't get into that here, I guess. But suffice it to say that the public media antics that followed Joseph's transfer at the hand of the Priests for Life media department there, it was untrue. I mean, the way they painted the picture of being the rescuers is absurd. It's really, truly absurd. They didn't even know who the hospital was.
And they did this in the States, or they're Canadian?
There is a Canadian version that was not really involved.
Okay.
A Canadian chapter of some sort. They were not really involved. This was a U.S.-based one.
All right.
And, I mean, they had to do it that way anyway. Well, maybe I should tell you. This is actually a quite interesting part of the story.
Okay.
If you don't mind a slight deviation. It seems that when something like this happens publicly, there are a lot of, it appears there's a lot of opportunities that unscrupulous people could take advantage of.
All right.
One of the things that happened here is what looked like an act of charity.
All right.
And merely goodwill and nothing else turned out to be an opportunistic effort. And what had happened is this, that when Priests for Life announced Frank Pavone as their leader, when they announced some weeks before publicly that they were going to pay for the flight, within about 1 or 2 weeks of that point, Frank Norris had told me this. He's one of the people involved with Priest for Life. He was quite excited in telling me that their membership of some sort had increased 20%.
Okay.
Just for making the announcement.
Really?
Now, I didn't know the significance of that at that point. I learned only much later that Priest for Life has an operating budget. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but what someone told me who had been associated with them was that it was roughly around $10 million a year, and probably at least around $8 million of that was from donations from membership.
All right.
And so I don't know if the new members who were coming in and joining on their mail list or list of potential donors, I don't know if it would be, if these were people that would be proportional donors in terms of amount, but 20% of $8 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot more than you need even to get a baby across the border.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And that's just on an annual basis. Now, of course, I don't know how that will all play out for them, but
right.
they certainly did increase their membership very dramatically in a very short period of time.
Okay.
The membership of people with whom they were communicating with as potential donors.
Okay.
So this was before things really took off for Joseph and being able to go to the U.S. Now, at the point that we were getting close to being able to get Joseph over the border, and I told them that I'd found a hospital. I didn't tell them who the hospital was.
Right.
I didn't even tell them what state the hospital was in.
Right.
They knew nothing. They later pretended that they made it sound like they set up the whole thing. But
okay.
They had nothing, literally nothing to do with finding the Cardinal Glennon Hospital.
Okay.
As an opportunity for Joseph, nothing, absolutely nothing. It was mm-hmm. already done. The deal was already done and arranged by the time the Priest for Life even knew who the hospital was.
Mm.
But once we had that basically set up, we had three disagreements from there.
You and Priest for Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Me and their executive, Father Pavone, who wanted to be on the flight for some reason with Joseph, and then go to the hospital in the U.S.
All right.
And
this was Father Pavone.
Yeah, he wanted to be on the plane for reasons that weren't clear to me at that point. And he also wanted the plane to make an extra stop en route from one hospital to the other. And maybe under normal circumstances that wouldn't matter, but in this case, because we were dealing with a child who was in an ICU state, and the airplane had to become an ICU. Basically, it's a flying ICU department. In order to do that safely, you were supposed to minimize the number of touchdowns and takeoffs, because apparently, as it was explained to me by an expert, when you take off and land, that is the time that is most likely to result in a problem for the patient. Like in Joseph's case, you know, maybe with the bumping around or whatever, the tube might come out and then they have to reinsert it while they're landing
right.
or taking off. So that it's not a good thing to add extra flight segments. It's a bad thing. So I said no to that, and they accepted it, sounded begrudgingly to me. And then I got another request, almost part of the same package, but they wanted Ali, who is Joseph's older brother, to not be on the flight because there wasn't enough room for Father Pavone if the entire Marashli family was going to be on the flight.
Okay.
Which was not cool to me, that a priest would say, can you leave your other kid at home so I can be on the flight so
right.
I can look good, you know,
because no.
I'm paying for this.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't cool, but I could understand that someone's putting all that money on the flight. Maybe, you know, for some historical reason, he wants to be part of the flight. And I wrote a letter to them trying to persuade them that it really isn't a good idea to leave the brother behind, because what if Joseph died en route or shortly after he got to the hospital in the U.S. and the family and the mother, picture being the mother, and you've just lost your baby, and your other child, your only other child that's living, is now, you know, hundreds of kilometers or 1,000 or more kilometers away.
Right.
It's just an unnatural, inappropriate situation that could have been avoided. So they came back to me and they acted like they were persuaded. Like
that. Who acted? Father Pavone?
The priest for life.
Okay.
I wasn't dealing at that point. I wasn't dealing with Father Pavone directly. It was mostly Frank Norris and Jerry Horn that I was dealing with.
All right.
What they did was they said that they had spoken to the flight crew and that the flight crew was amenable for both of them to come on because Joseph, he was described as being small and he could be squeezed in.
Okay.
Which,
with all his equipment, is probably not true.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was true or not, but that's what I was told, and I accepted it. And even if it was true, the point is that's not what transpired. They told me that what they would do is they would squeeze him in because he was small, and that he could be squeezed in. As things turned out, he didn't end up on the flight. Neither did the mother.
Sounds like time for another break with Duke Robillard. Do Me Right.
You got to treat me
get along.
She had to come at a later time on a standard commercial jetliner, you know, a day or two later, whatever it was.
How did Joseph get there?
He went there with his father and Father Pavone.
Oh, okay.
And anyway,
and his brother didn't go either.
That's right. The mother and brother came on a separate flight on a commercial airline.
Ugly, okay.
Yeah, later. They were left behind, in other words.
So that,
you know, from what I can tell, so that Father Pavone could be on that flight. And I didn't realize all of why they were so intent on Father Pavone being on the flight, other than for maybe historical reasons.
All right.
What I didn't realize until much later was that there was a specific purpose they had in mind. And it was this: they wanted to have, they're closely connected with Fox News.
Oh, okay.
Father Pavone has influential contacts with Fox News, being the prominent priest that he is in the U.S. The third disagreement that came up before Joseph flew was around the media. And the Priest for Life wanted me to accept that they were going to have Fox News all over this when Joseph arrived triumphantly in the United States and got to get transferred into the new hospital there. And I flatly denied that. That was completely out of the question, because the main reason was that I had established a secrecy agreement with the Cardinal Glennon Hospital.
All right.
Directly with Dr. Wilmot, I committed to him that I would make sure everything was kept secret about the identity of his hospital, but everything.
All right.
The exact time, so that when Joseph arrived there, there'd be no media, and no media would be able to know where he even was automatically, so that they could take a few days to settle in with Joseph and then decide how they wanted to handle the media issue. And so I had this agreement. I actually suggested it to the Cardinal Glennon Hospital even before they requested it, as something that they would probably want to consider. And then they accepted it, and then we agreed, and we had an agreement that would be the case. So I made a lot of effort to ensure the secrecy. And here, Priest for Life wanted to completely take a different approach. And so I had to naturally say, no, forget it. There's no news.
All right.
It's not going to happen because I have this commitment. And then I could tell in their voices, because this was a telephone conversation, I could tell in their voices that they were not happy with that. And I got this ridiculous rhetoric that came along the lines of, well, you know, when you fly in a situation like this, word can get out. So if Fox or other media is covering this, you know, it could happen just because of leaking. You know, the control tower will know and who we're transporting. So it's going to leak and it could be in the news anyway. And then I thought, oh, brother, I can't believe they're trying to, you know, frame it this way. And what I told them, listen, you guys, I had asked you previously, what's the latest point in time at which you're allowed to inform the control tower who you've got on that plane?
Right.
And where you're going. What's the latest time? They told me half an hour before flight. This was already something I knew from a previous conversation with them. So I told, in this new conversation where they were trying to make it sound like it could leak anyway through no influence of their own, I made the point that with half an hour's notice before flight, if Fox, on a short-haul flight, because it's not a big distance from London to St. Louis, if Fox is there on the ground when you arrive, I know who I'm going to blame.
All right.
This is what I told them.
Mm-hmm.
And they acted very offended that I would think of them that way, that they would do something underhanded like that, and, acted quite offended. And I let them, you know, vent that, and then I repeated again. I said, I hear what you're saying, but if Fox or anyone else is there, mm-hmm. If this hits the news before it's supposed to be, in a short time, then I know who I'm going to blame. And we left it at that.
Okay.
So next thing I know, within a couple of days of that, they were quite upset with that, because what became clear later is that that's why Pavone was going to be on the plane. It wasn't just a photo op for historical reasons. It was, they had this whole media campaign planned,
right,
in which they were pretending that they were the quote unquote rescuers of Joseph.
Right.
Like at
to get members.
They were like the taxi drivers.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones who paid the air ambulance. Mm-hmm. That was the way it was supposed to be. And then mm-hmm. they were going to very supposedly generously pay for the hostel stay.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, they didn't even pay for the air ambulance. The air ambulance company itself donated all that expense, including their employee time.
But we should give them a mention then. Who was the air ambulance company?
Kalita Air Flight Systems or something like
with
that.
With a T or a K?
Here, I'll get you the contact. Hang on a second. Kalita Med Flight.
Is that spelled with a T or a K?
K-A-L-I-T-T-A.
Okay. Nice of them.
So they ended up donating the flight, and Priest for Life ended up fronting the cost for the hospital.
Okay.
But as it turned out, what I thought was going to be a simple donation from Priest for Life to the Cardinal Glennon Hospital for covering Joseph's medical expenses didn't even turn out to be that, because this media campaign also involved a fundraising drive by Priest for Life to recover those costs.
Okay.
So to me, that kind of put them in the position of a bridge financier, which, is not necessarily a bad thing, but that's the way it should have been presented then.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been presented like, here we are, we're going to just give money.
Yeah.
It should be that, we're going to give the money up front, and then we're going to endeavor to recover that through increased donations.
Okay.
Earmarked for this purpose. And we're going to, in their case, they did it in a way that wasn't even based on the truth. They made it sound like they had done the rescuing, therefore would have been more deserving of the donation support from all these new people.
So the way,
the way
it looks is, when it was all done, Priest for Life had picked up the hospital bill but wanted some participation from you, or at least some acquiescence from you in a fundraising drive to recover the costs. Kalita Med, the air transfer people, had just flat waived the fees for transporting Joseph, and you had him safe and sound in Cardinal Glennon, where you could find out more about what was wrong with him and what were the complications in getting him home.
That's right. Here Joseph is today, breathing on his own, not even a ventilator.
Okay.
At home.
Okay. You've been listening to patient advocate Sam Sansalone talk about his strategy, his efforts, and his success in bringing baby Joseph home from hospital to a loving family and a self-sufficient life. And to take us out, Duke Robillard again, "Baby, You Don't Know."
See me laughing, I'm laughing just to keep from crying. Baby, you don't know, but you mean so much to me. Baby,
don't know what you mean so much to me. Well, I've tried so hard, but I just can't let you be. Makes my head go round and round. You don't know, you sure don't know my mind. When you see me laughing, I'm laughing just to keep from crying.
Well, maybe that's where we go next week.
What happened at Cardinal Glennon?
Yeah, how the thing began to come together at Cardinal Glennon.
Yeah, there's certainly some interesting things about that as well.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I'd say so.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't had one meal yet today.
Uh-oh.
I just haven't.
Well, we should let you go and get one. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the Internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.msumcmaster.ca. You can email us at dialogue@radio.fm. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.